This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Writer Tyeri Jones is committed to talking about the South as she sees it. Her critically acclaimed novels are deeply rooted in Atlanta and explore the intersection of Black family stories and the structures that define American life. Her 2018 book, An American Marriage, was selected for Oprah's Book Club and named by former President Barack Obama as one of his favorite books of the year. It's optioned for a movie and was most recently nominated for an NAACP Image Award. The novel tells the story of a recently married couple torn apart by a false conviction. It is at once an exploration of love, masculinity, and justice. Tyeri Jones is a professor of English and creative writing at Emory University. She's in North Carolina this week as the 2019 Frank B. Haynes Writer in Residence at UNC Chapel Hill. She's going to be giving a public reading tonight, but first she joins me in the studio. Welcome to The State of Things. Good to have you back.
Thanks.
This book, let's talk a little bit about your relationship with Atlanta, because I think Atlanta plays an important part, and why that city plays such an important role in your writing.
Well, I was born and raised in Atlanta. For the last 10 years, I've lived in New York City. And it's been, when I was in New York, it was clear to me that I wasn't home. That even though I was there, I was never quite a New Yorker. I think Atlanta is one of those cities that defines a person. You know, I was born downtown Atlanta. I went to Spelman College. My understanding of who I am is as a Southern writer. I'm not often called a Southern writer because I think that we normally let a writer be one thing and people think of me as a Black writer, and I am, but you know, Black writers are Southern writers too. So I write the South because I think we're really it's my home one, but also I think the South is so misunderstood. When I was in New York, they act like I got to Brooklyn, you know, on the Underground Railroad or something. They don't know what our lives are like here.
Well, maybe the first thing they don't know is that there isn't the South, right? I mean, there are more than one, particularly if you come from a place like Atlanta, which is a particular kind of South, is it not?
Well, every South is a particular type. I mean, part of my work is, when I say I'm from Atlanta, they say, oh, that's not really the South. It seems that if you're a Black Southerner and you have a happy and rewarding life, people try to convince you that you're some kind of outlier. And I think there's nothing more marginalizing than telling someone that their experience doesn't count.
Mm. Well, the experiences in this book, An American Marriage, are true to life experiences that a lot of people experience, and yet utterly unique in the sense that you have a marriage torn apart by an unjustified conviction. Tell us more about the characters in the story, because I want to talk about how this book came about for you.
Well, An American Marriage is the story of Celestial and Roy. They've only been married 18 months. They are kind of the embodiment of the New South. They went to Spelman and Morehouse. He's a young executive. She's an artist. Her work is being shown in important places. They are ambitious. They are optimistic. And they are in love. They go visit his parents in the small town of Louisiana where he grew up. And while they're there, he's arrested for a crime he didn't commit. And the novel is really about the way that their relationship is tested and the ethics and moral quandary that happens when someone you love is in this terrible predicament. Like, should his wife wait? Is it right for him to ask her to wait? Can she wait? What does it mean to wait? All of these questions. And I think at the heart of it is that this is a young couple who are facing a dilemma, asking questions they never should have had to ask in the first place.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that, about the theme and the way the criminal justice system works in this country, particularly when it comes to African-American families and individuals.
You know, I've always had prison in my peripheral vision. I mean, sometimes when you write a novel, people think you had some kind of lightning strike in your life that motivates you to think about a topic. But when it comes to prison, I didn't experience a lightning bolt. I feel like in my life, it's been raining all the time. There's always someone you know or someone who knows someone who's been to prison. You know, I'm a college professor, but I know the ways that you can put money on people's commissaries in prison because it's just such, they call it mass incarceration because it's happening to so many people. And I was really interested in the collateral effects, the way it affects people who are not in prison, the long tentacles of this.
The fascinating thing is, as you say, these Celestial and Roy have it all going on. They represent American aspiration writ large, and they're identifiable to many, many Americans, regardless of race, up until a point. And then suddenly their situation becomes in many ways unique, something that we wouldn't expect to happen necessarily to a white family.
Well, you know, I wish it was unique, but it happens to a lot of people. But it is a specifically, I think, something that's more likely to happen to people in communities of color. But they are also unique among this demographic because they are an upwardly mobile couple. Mm-hmm. Most of the people who are wrongfully incarcerated are poor and working class, and they are not, which does give them a different type of experience. For example, Roy is freed, but because, you know, Celestial's family can hire the lawyer as long as the lawyer is needed. So that is something that makes this, their situation unusual. And sometimes I struggle with that because it's not really representative. But also it represents the Black middle class fear that despite your education, despite your money, that this can happen to you anyway. There's no sense of safety even when you've done everything right.
So talk about how this inspiration came to you, because I know you said earlier you've been thinking about it. I mean, the carceral state is something that's on your mind, prison, the criminal justice system. As you begin to think about writing a novel, that created a problem for you. This was an issue in your mind.
Well, you know, I had accepted a fellowship to study at the Radcliffe Institute at Harvard to study incarceration. And I learned a lot and I was horrified by some of the statistics, but I wasn't inspired to write a novel for many reasons. For one, I was just angry, and anger for me is in a place from which I create art. But also I believe that the best art comes from a place of moral ambiguity. And when you talk about wrongful incarceration, there's no ambiguity. They call it wrongful incarceration because it's wrong. So I didn't know how to find, I couldn't find my feet as a storyteller, but I was home in Atlanta in the mall and I overheard a couple. They were young and they were in love and they were in trouble. And I heard the woman say, clear as a bell, she said, "Roy, you know you wouldn't have waited on me for 7 years." And I felt like she was right. And then he looked back at her and said, "I don't know what you're talking about. This wouldn't have happened to you in the first place." And I thought he was right. And I knew that I could write a novel about a couple separated by this incarceration, because I know I have a novel when I have a situation where everyone's right, yet they disagree.
Can you read for us?
Sure. This is the day that Roy is sentenced. And this is from the point of view of Celestial. 12 years is what they gave him. We would be 43 years old when he was released. Roy understood that 12 years was an eternity because he sobbed right there at the defendant's table. His knees gave way and he fell into his chair. The judge paused and demanded that Roy bear this news on his feet. He stood again and cried, not like a baby, but in a way that only a grown man can cry, from the bottom of his feet, up through his torso, and finally through his lips. When a man wails like that, you know it's all the tears that he was never allowed to shed, from Little League disappointment to teenage heartbreak, all the way up to whatever injured his spirit just last year. As Roy howled, my fingers kept worrying a rough patch of skin beneath my chin, a souvenir of scar tissue. When they did what I remember as kicking in the door, what everyone else remembers as opening it with the key, after the door was open, however it was open, we were both pulled from the bed. They dragged Roy into the parking lot, and I followed, lunging for him, wearing nothing but a white slip. Someone pushed me to the ground, and my chin hit the pavement. My slip rode up, showing everything to everyone, and my tooth sank into the soft skin of my bottom lip. Roy was on the asphalt beside me, barely beyond my grasp, speaking words that didn't reach my ears. I don't know how long we lay there, parallel like burial plots. Husband, wife, what God has brought together, let no man tear asunder.
Tyeri Jones reading from her latest novel, An American Marriage. She's in North Carolina this week as the 2019 Frank B. Haynes Writer in Residence at UNC Chapel Hill. Going to give a public reading tonight at Genome Sciences Auditorium on the UNC campus at 7:30. We've got that information at our website, stateofthings.org. It's the one line in there is sort of devastating. The whole thing is a beautiful passage, but the line about all the tears he was allowed to shed as a man, or something to that effect. I mean, the idea that masculinity is very much, and again, a sort of unique experience. I mean, this is, I don't know if you can have a sort of unique experience. It's either unique or not. But that his masculinity plays an important part. And while They're joined together as a married couple. There are all of these currents and identities that they have to struggle with.
Well, I think in many ways this is a novel about fatherhood. Roy has been reared by his stepfather, who, as the story goes, loved him so much that when Roy's stepfather married Roy's mother, the stepfather gave Roy his name. As they said, he made me his junior. And this idea of passing on, you know, the name from one man to another. But then also in the story is his biological father, who feels displaced that some other man has renamed his son. And it's about legacy of fatherhood. One father is kind of upright, hardworking, dependable. And the other one is something of a rascal and a scamp. But they all try to parent him as best they can with the kind of limited resources. And they all have trouble accessing their feelings, but all the characters are trying to figure out how they relate to their father. Even Celestial and her own father, she's a daddy's girl, but when she doesn't live her life the way her father sees fit, he rejects her. And everyone, it's about generation too, like the way that a legacy of manhood from one generation to the next. And particularly when you think of African-American communities, there's so much difference from generation to generation because of the advances of civil rights. So how do you raise your, do you raise your son with the values of the past, with the idea of peril from the past? And for in Roy's case, the peril of the past has come to get him. So even though he's the next generation, he's facing Jim Crow challenges. But if you raised your child for Jim Crow challenges, what happens to your son if that doesn't happen? Like, what does it mean to raise your kid for the worst possible case scenario?
And what does it mean for advances in feminism along the way as you try to explore empathically the trials of Black masculinity over and against a culture like this? And I think you've said that that this book has blown apart many a book club as they try to figure out, you know, and moral ambiguity at the heart of this thing, and ideological ambiguity as well. What about that? And did you have to wrestle with issues of Black feminism, Black masculinity, carceral state, all these things are cross currents at certain points?
Well, I think about my heroine, Celestial, who is an artist, like I'm an artist, and she wants from her life the same things I want from my life. She wants to be successful in her art. She wants to follow her dream. Her husband is wrongfully incarcerated. Usually, if you say there's a woman who's an artist and she wants to follow her dream, but the circumstances of her marriage interfere with her dream, you would normally say, you know, girl, follow your dream. You know, you were given this gift for a reason. But in the wake of her husband's incarceration, for her to have any ambition for herself is seen as a betrayal of the cause. And how does this balancing act work? I mean, there are a lot of novels about middle-class white women who are following their dreams or being artistic, but their husbands are not in trouble. As a matter of fact, their husbands represent power. And so when they resist power, we applaud them when we read about them. But for a Black woman, it's super complicated because Roy is wrongfully incarcerated. But should Celestial not follow her dream, this would not get him out of prison. But it seems almost like her thriving is a slap in his face. And I think this is a problem that can scale. I think all the problems this couple faces can scale down. I think the problems that everyday couples experience are just huge for them. But there's always that question of, are you succeeding at his expense? Even though it doesn't work that way, it feels that way.
Because and your intuition and instinct that you can't write a novel about an issue because issues are approached by political activism. And then there's what families do and how people make decisions. And this gulf that I think you expose beautifully through the literature, they don't speak to each other. There's a way in which individuals within a family would act and ways to approach and try to bring down a carceral state. They may not be the same thing. And in fact, they may work across purposes.
Writing this novel broke my heart in that that's why I got stranded 50 pages from the end for a year. It was such a nightmare. I couldn't end it because I wanted a way forward for all the characters, but I did not understand that there was a way that they could all be not happy, but they could be content or fulfilled at the same time. But I realized that I was allowing Roy, the character, to drag me through this novel. Roy thinks the moral measure of the story, the moral measure of everyone around him, is the extent to which they can help him get back what he's lost. He feels he's lost his car, his job, his woman, his status, and who can give it back to him? But it occurred to me finally after a year of being stranded that what he really lost was his experience in prison made him forget that he had something emotional that he could offer other people. He may not be able to offer money. He may not have a good job. He may not have status, but he's a human being and he has not only the ability to contribute to his relationships, but the obligation to contribute emotionally is what makes you a citizen of your own life. And when he realizes that, he regains his citizenship. And once he has his citizenship, he is able to move forward, and then everyone else can move forward as well.
Did you, at that moment, have to go back and rewrite any of what you had written when you made that breakthrough?
No, I realized that I'm leaving myself hints. I call them Easter eggs. I hide Easter eggs to myself throughout the text. Like, even in the part of the story where there's a huge plot twist, which we will not reveal, regarding a friend he makes in prison, I was stunned when that was revealed. I felt like, wait, what? No. But then I reread it and I said, oh my goodness, it was here all along. Roy and I weren't paying attention. And that's how novels surprise me. I like to have the same feeling of breathless anticipation as a writer that I want you to have as a reader.
And apparently Oprah and Barack Obama, too. Congratulations. Always a pleasure to talk with you. Tyeri Jones, author of four novels, professor of English and creative writing at Emory University. Her latest critically acclaimed book is An American Marriage. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. She's going to be at in North Carolina this week, the Frank B. Haynes Writer-in-Residence, UNC Chapel Hill. I'm going to give a public reading tonight at the Genome Sciences Auditorium, UNC Campus, 7:30. Of course, we've got the information at our website, stateofthings.org. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.